Welcome to the Space Show, Michael.
Thank you very much.
I believe you've been involved in the satellite remote sensing and in even using rocket photographs ever since the 1970s.
Yes, we were one of the first, in fact the first company to set up in remote sensing in 1970, and prior to the current series of satellites, the Landsat satellites, we were interpreting rocket imagery from Woomera and airborne infrared photography.
But that must have been pretty exciting. Did you actually go to the rocket range and see it go off, or you just get the photographs back later?
No, just get the photographs back. I've been to the rocket range, but not to see that actual rocket go.
Right, okay. So, 1972, wasn't it? Landsat was the first launch?
That's right, yeah. Mm. It was launched in 72, and we had our first image from NASA in... we had our first image from NASA in 6 weeks after that 1972 launch. We were, in fact, the Eros Data Center, which was NASA's distribution agency, who's one of their first clients outside North America.
Right. In those days, of course, you got the data in photographic form, didn't you?
Yeah. Most of the, in fact, we still have probably one, a fairly rare archive now of about 10,000 satellite images in photographic form from those early Landsat days. And it wasn't probably until about 78 or so that digital analysis really came into play.
Digital being on computer tape.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. So nowadays, people get it on CD-ROM now, don't they?
Yeah, you can get it on CD-ROM now. You can get it in virtually any form that computers handle. You can get it on large 9-track tapes, you know, the big tapes, or you can get it on small exabyte tapes, rather like an audio tape, or you can get it on CD-ROM.
Okay. Now, your company, Technical and Field Surveys, is obviously developed from those early days.
Mm-hmm.
And you now have a broad range of services. What are they?
Yeah, well, we tend to, you know, sort of provide an end-to-end service. We've been involved in building the remote sensing industry in Australia since it started. So we've been involved in all the government committees and setting up remote sensing associations and this sort of thing. But our services these days cover the whole range. We do... consulting the government on policy, we do interpretation of mineral areas and environmental areas, we work on revegetation, we do quite a lot of work overseas in terms of, for instance, a project we just finished is working in Thailand on the on a natural disaster rehabilitation after a cyclone. We do training for groups like the Murray-Darling Basin Commission and mining companies again and so forth. We trained the F-111 squadron in remote sensing techniques. We've trained the Chinese government and so forth. So we've done quite a lot of varied things.
Mm. So, like the Air Force crews, they use multispectral cameras, do they, in their work?
Well, they do generally anyway as part of their as part of the equipment on the F-111s, but they were interested in the more general applications of remote sensing.
Hmm. And say with the work in Thailand, mm-hmm. Would the Thais get the data and give it to you, or do you buy it direct from EOSAT and from Spot?
Oh no, what happened in that case? We're actually a distributor for the Thai government as well. As we are for the Russian government as well. But in that case, this was a joint Australian-Thai project where we went into Thailand, got the information from Thailand, analysed the area before the typhoon and after the typhoon and looked at what changes they had to make for land use. Mm. So it was a government-to-government project that we were operating.
There's one big difference between the French and the American satellites and the Russian system, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a very big difference in that the French and the American satellites are almost all digital, so they're sending down data by telemetry, whereas the Russian data is all photographic. Or the Russian data that we deal with mainly is photographic.
So they put up a satellite and then they recover it back?
Then they recover the film back from the satellite. Either if it's a short-life satellite, they soft land the satellite, but if it's a longer term satellite, they actually parachute it back into Siberia.
Mm. And does that mean there's any difference in the use of the data afterwards?
Yeah, because with the case of photographic imagery, it's actually very much like the traditional things that people have used for many years in aerial photography. And so you can use exactly the same methods, you can use the same photogrammetric equipment and so forth, and it's also much higher resolution. So whereas the best of the digital images, say, is spot panchromatic, which is 10 meters resolution, Russian imagery is about the standard Russian imagery is about 5 meters resolution and goes down to 1 or 2 meters.
So that means you could see the family car and the Russian satellites.
Yeah, well, on the newer satellites, the KVR satellites, they you can tell the difference, say, between a Holden and a Volkswagen.
Mm. You wouldn't be able to see the details of it, but you'd better see it as
it's a different size and shape. Mm. Yeah.
But the Russian system isn't multispectral, is it?
Yes, it is. Oh. But it's, well, it's a matter of semantics. It's multi-band rather than multispectral.
Yes.
So in other words, what they do is that they take several films of the same area with different filters in front of them. So you can get, I'll take one in infrared and one in red and one in green, but they are actually photographs, whereas the digital sensors on Landsat and Spot record the actual wavelength as a digital signal. So there are different ways of doing it, but they are actually multispectral.
Are these photos taken simultaneously, or are they taken one after the other, which means the satellite would have moved?
No, they're taken simultaneously, so you actually get exactly the same area covered. So it's the technology that led up to the Landsat and so forth. Before Landsat, there was there's a period when people took multispectral aircraft photography, and what you do then is you have a negative that has four areas on it, say, and then you have four lenses, and each lens takes a different wavelength by filter. So that's the way they work.
You mentioned that environmental groups are using your services. What's their interest in using space technology?
Well, essentially, satellite imagery is one of the few ways that you can monitor the environment. You know, if you look at aerial photography, it's taken maybe once every 10 years. If you go out on the ground, you can only go out every so often, then you can't get regular recording. With satellite imagery, because it comes over, say, in Landsat's case, every 16 days, you can actually monitor the status of vegetation and whether it's declining or improving or whether it's changing in nature. You can look at land degradation. And so with the emphasis on monitoring the environment, then satellite imagery does it perfectly.
Mm. And does that monitoring flow on into environmental policy and things like that?
Yeah, it does, because, for instance, at the moment, I'm not sure in Victoria, but in New South Wales, for instance, local governments have been had new regulations that say they have to monitor the state of their council environment every year and create 5-year rolling plans on the state of the environment. And then those plans are aggregated into a state of the environment report. And they've recognised through things like the Environmental Protection Agency that the only way they can do that is by using satellite imagery.
Mm.
So it's something that starts at community level, goes through to local government level, and goes right up to state level, and ultimately to national level. And these days, with our protocols with things like the Rio Accord and Agenda 21, goes right through to international monitoring.
And does the government have any policy on the use of remote sensing data here in Australia?
Policy in a sense that there is an organisation that's now been ratified by government called the Australian Space Council. And the Australian Space Council is administered by the Department of Industry, Technology and Commerce.
Has the government taken on this policy?
Well, this at the moment, the government's, I guess, shown its commitment in terms of setting up and giving a budget to the Space Council. The Space Council is now looking at the mechanisms that need to be put into the place, so the government is funding that. And I guess one has yet to see how those action is taken on those, but certainly we're all hopeful that now we'll get some movement.
So the mood is quite optimistic now, as against the pessimism that used to be around a few years ago.
Yeah, well, the problem that we saw in the early days was that we were always lagging behind. We were always, for instance, as an example, Landsat went up, as you know, in 1972. It took us till 1979 to get a station to receive it. By the time we got that, new satellites were planned, and again, when they flew in 1982, it took us another 4 or 5 years to actually be able to receive them. At least the government's becoming a little proactive now and looking at how it can position itself in the market, because it's now not only a major public benefit in global systems like sort of measuring the greenhouse effect and looking at the global environment and so forth, but it's also an industry, and Australia has a lot of potential to take part in that industry, but it's got to have a lot of government support to make it happen, and the government now begins to look like it's going to give it. It hasn't in the past.
Okay then, well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Michael.
It's a great pleasure, Andrew. It's nice talking to you.